Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I am so excited about today's guest, not only because she is someone that we've never really had on before, but also she is genuinely my favorite person to follow on Instagram. I think I've followed her for about a year and a half, and she is completely anonymous, which I just think has made it all the more exciting to feel like you're like have an emotional attachment with someone that could literally be anyone. But I started following her when I was single and looking for single positivity, looking for someone to like be honest around all the things that are never really talked about around dating. But even more interestingly, for the purpose of today and the chat, is that she is a social worker specializing in child protection.
I was loving that intro. I was sitting here smiling like, yeah.
So on Instagram, you are La 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 Let Me Explain, and we are going to call you La La for the purpose of the podcast. Can I just say, like, one of the things that I love about you so much, apart from like the content you put out, is that your content that you put out is from a place of knowledge and education. And what I mean by that is I feel like there's any of us can be a social media expert these days, myself included. So this isn't me like bitching about anyone, but like I can put up something empowering and everyone's like, wow, that's so empowering. But I could have just like seen it on a meme or like read it in a book. Whereas you actually you are a dating educator. You are a qualified social worker. Like you have seen it, lived it, been educated in it.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it makes a difference. And I you know, I like you, I love the fact that social media has given a voice to so many people. I think that platforms don't need to be reserved for experts. I think it's so brilliant and beautiful to have so many people, especially women, telling their stories. I think it's empowering, it's brilliant for us all. But sometimes I think that there are certain accounts out there who do put out information that they don't necessarily know or understand. I've seen it on quite a few big accounts where they'll answer questions about narcissism or they'll answer questions about abuse, and it's slightly off the mark. And so, yes, I really do try to come from a place of talking about things that I actually genuinely know about and trying to get real information out there.
What was the reasoning originally for you to be anonymous? Like, how did the La 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 Let Me Explain begin? Because I can't even remember when I found you or how I found you. I just remember being like absolutely fascinated by the content, and I think it was even like a year later that we started like regularly chatting.
Yeah, I can't remember, because you're like my friend now. You're my close friends. So I feel like you've been around for ages. But I started in 2017, and when I started, it wasn't really with any intent. Like, I didn't start feeling like, right, this is going to be a big Instagram account. It was more that I'd had all these epiphanies about dating, and you know, I'd been a social worker for years, so I'd obviously been really good at being able to give other people advice, but was never able to apply that to my own life. So it was much more about, I want women to know what I know. I want to be able to pass on this knowledge and these epiphanies that I've had about fuckboys. So it's more about getting a message out, but not with any real intent of making it big. Or, you know, me and my friend had these kind of like, one day I'll write a book about it, you know, but it was never like, right, I'm going to sit down and do a 5-year business plan or anything. So when I started it, I was still working as a social worker. So obviously I had to be anonymous because the two things are kind of incongruent, you know, like I couldn't go to work and talk to people, you know, and do assessments on families while then going home and writing about fuckboys on the internet, you know. So that was kind of the original reason. And then I am maintaining my anonymity, even though I've left my social work career, because there's a lot of people who I don't need them to know who I am or where I am. You know, I've assisted many women and families from leaving very violent men. I've removed children from parents, if, you know, for good reason. But, you know, that puts me at risk, really, in terms of being a public figure. And I've also got a son. You know, my son is going to be going to secondary school in a couple of years. And I don't want him to be that kid in the playground whose mum is known for talking about micro penises or blowjobs or any of the stuff that I talk about online. You know, I think that as a boy, especially sadly still in the world that we live, I just think it will make him a target. And I don't want to do that to him. You know, that's his choice if he wants to tell people. But I think that it's best that he has that choice for him to be anonymous and me to be anonymous.
I suppose as well, I'm speaking for you, like maybe I'm wrong, but it probably allows you to talk about things without having to worry that a judgment on yourself.
Yeah, I think there is that. I mean, there's certainly, if my face was attached to it all, I think I'd be a lot more shy about some of the, you know, the stuff that I've spoken about. But also my anonymity protects other people. You know, I've spoken about my dad's addiction. I've spoken about dates I've been on and men that have done terrible things and whatever, and not necessarily that they deserve protection or they don't necessarily deserve anonymity. But I think that it would, you know, I wouldn't be able to share things if I felt like, well, actually that person might be identifiable if I'm sharing this because somebody might know me and then would put the two together. You know what I mean? So I just think all round it just works so much better for me, you know. And I don't want to be famous. I just the thought of being famous for me is like actual hell. I mean, you know, you're in that world, so you must kind of, I wonder whether, do you feel like you wish that you could go out into the shops and stuff and not think that people are like, oh, look, it's Ashley Louise James. You know what I mean?
Do you know what? It's a funny thing, because I feel like I've got a good balance of it where actually the majority of people don't know or don't give a shit. So I feel like I can go around every day. Like, some of my friends are like very famous, and I kind of do feel a bit sorry for them because, you know, they kind of have to be on guard all the time. But also it's a tricky balance for me because I feel like I presume that no one knows who I am, but I'm slightly paranoid that someone might know who I am.
Yeah. Do you get papped and stuff?
Yeah, I have done. And do you know what actually really upset me was that I was papped the first time I stepped out with Alf. So I hadn't announced that I was pregnant anywhere, like even to my friends. I think I'd told like my real, like nearest and dearest, like family and like the three close friends in my circle, but I just didn't want to be like glued to my phone, and you know, I just wanted to tell people in my own time. And the day after childbirth, so I got home from the hospital at 7 and I woke up in the morning and I was like, oh, I want to go for a walk and get out into the fresh air. And also, I think because I'm like a child myself, I just wanted to like play with all my new toys, like the pram and the baby carrier. And I was so excited. You know, you have them around your house for so long. And then by the time I got home, my phone started pinging. And I was like, why? Like, who is messaging me? And it was basically like every like person that I vaguely know, kind of know. And basically I'd been papped it was in Battersea Park when I lived in Battersea. And I'd quite often get papped, like, I don't think people were waiting for me. It was more because like famous people live around the area. So they're like, oh, she'll do, bit shit. It's not quite Vogue and Spencer, but it'll do. So I got like in those cases, yeah, it is it's hard. But I had it worse when I was single and some paps found out where I lived in my old house. And I remember being like one of them, like followed me home. And at the time I was like you said, dating a lot of like fuck boys, not a lot of fuck boys. I mean, but I was thinking like, God, I really don't want my love life. Like I was always really protective of like my dating life because the narrative in the press was always Ashley, like so-and-so's rumoured fling Ashley James, or da-da-da's ex Ashley James, or da-da-da. And I always felt no matter how much I tried to like build my own name, I was always someone, like even like da-da-da's rumoured fling. It was never even confirmed that I dated this person. It was a rumour, but yeah, my name was still always attached to them. And I was like, why can't I just be Ashley? Yeah. Why can't I just be Ashley James? But anyway, yeah, that's like a whole other conversation around like the fame side of it. But I want to talk to you about so many things. And the first one, like you mentioned, and I should have mentioned in the intro, is that, of course, you're a mum to a son. Mm-hmm. And you, I believe, at least were, or if not are, a single mum.
I am, yeah.
Can you tell me about this story? So your ex cheated on you in your pregnancy?
Yes, yeah. He did. Yeah, I mean, I never go into too much detail about that because, again, it's like, you know, my son is my priority. And until he's older, I probably, you know, I protect him from why his dad and I aren't together, because he's now married to the woman that he cheated on me with. And for that reason, I want my son to, I want my son to have a really positive view of her. I want her to be a bonus mum. I want her to be, I think that if he was aware that she was one of the reasons why we're not together, that could be a really difficult thing for him to accept. And I think it might make him feel like she's responsible for him and for me and his dad not being together, so, which she's not. And actually I really support their relationship because they are a much better match than me and him ever would have been. So I was devastated at the time when I found out, and obviously wanted to do anything I could to get him back. But with hindsight, I'm really glad it worked out the way that it did. That me and him were not meant to be together. So even though he should have dealt with that in a different way, I've come to accept that it was just the right thing in every way.
Do you know what? That's such a like a lovely thing to hear. That even though it was obviously like a devastating thing for you, that you're not putting the blame on to her, which I'm sure at the time it was like hurtful.
Oh, I was initially. Initially, I was like, fucking slag.
Yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like as women, that's what we're automatically like raised for whatever reason, to kind of see other women as the enemy. And even when it's like, for example, like, sorry to feel like I always like bring it back to like showbiz gossip, but even like recently, Katie Price is, being in the news because she was arrested for breaking a restraining order against like her ex-husband's new wife. And I was thinking like, but she's not, obviously you don't know the ins and outs and what goes on, but I was like, but it's not her, like take up the issue with him. It always seems to be like the other woman.
You know, I do, I think that if the other woman didn't know at all, then she's not your enemy whatsoever. It's all on him. I think if the other woman knew, which my son's dad's wife fully knew, they worked together. I'd been told not to worry about her. You know, it was one of those situations where it's still wholly his responsibility. I do feel like you've broken girl code, you know?
What I feel like I keep going off on tangents, and what I really want to like speak to you is about your experience. So as, I mean, I guess as a single mum, but also as a first time mum, a first time woman pregnant suddenly on her own, like what was that experience like, and how was it raising a son on your own?
Oh, it was absolutely horrible because we'd been trying for a baby. And again, that was one of those things where we definitely should not have been trying for a baby. We should have ended the relationship. We should have said that there's nothing that's going to repair this or make this better. I was 27 and my body clock just started ticking like loudly. I just had this like real deep sensation within me that I needed to be pregnant. And people talk about this body clock thing and I'd never paid any attention to it really, but it was like suddenly I turned 27 and this thing just, it was like my womb was in control. I became sort of obsessed by it, and I wasn't one of those people who was always like, I can't wait to have children. I knew I wanted to be a mum, but I wasn't like obsessed with having children until that moment hit. And then I was like, right, I have to get pregnant. And we'd been together for 5 years. He was totally up for that as far as I knew. And I came off the pill in the July and I was pregnant by the November. And that's when I found out, I think I was 6 weeks pregnant when I found out about what was going on with him. And it was a bit more complicated than that actually at the beginning. But anyway, so I it was like right from early days of pregnancy. And it was really awful because he phoned me. So we'd actually split up. He'd moved all of his stuff out of the house. And then he phoned me on his lunch break from work. And he was like, listen, you know, I just need to let you know that if you go ahead with this pregnancy, you are going to be on your own. None of my family are going to speak to you. Nobody wants any involvement with this. So if you're choosing to not terminate, you're choosing to do this alone and you need to accept that. And I was just in utter shock because this wasn't just some guy that I'd been shagging. This was my boyfriend who we lived together. Our families were completely intertwined. Like all our friends were the same mutual friends. Like it was very traumatic. So luckily I've got a really good relationship with my mum. And I was about 16 weeks into the pregnancy and she just said, come and live with me, which was just such a godsend because I couldn't afford to keep renting the place that I'd been living in with my ex. So moved in with my mum, which was just the best thing ever. And if you're in that position, I would really recommend it. But yeah, I did the whole pregnancy on my own, and I was a bit mad sometimes during the pregnancy, you know, like I was like calling him over and over and over again, just like, please come to the first scan. And then until he changed his phone number,
he really cut off. Like he was not interested.
He completely cut off. His family cut me off. Although I kept texting his mum every time I had a scan, every time I had any like news, when I found out it was going to be a boy at the 20-week scan, all of that stuff, I was texting his mum just to say, like, because I didn't want him to miss this opportunity. I thought he was as stubborn as fuck. Like, I'm not really into star signs, but he was a Taurus. And apparently they're like really notorious for being incredibly stubborn. And he showed me to that side of him a few times in the relationship, that he is someone who will cut off his own nose to spite his face. And he really stuck to that. Like he was, because he'd said that to me, because he'd said, I'm promising you that you will be a single mum. There was this, I knew from his perspective that he was not going to back down. But yeah, so I kept giving these opportunities to his family, like, please come to the scan, blah, blah, blah. Heard nothing whatsoever back from them. His mum was a little bit involved during the pregnancy. And then I ended up getting preeclampsia and having quite a sort of traumatic birth story right in the middle of the London riots. So it was all just like mad. And then his family turned up. So I'd let them know that I was in labor again, like one last shot, like, will he turn up? This is his first child. Is he going to miss the birth of his own child? And he did, but his mum and sister came. Yeah. And then I gave opportunities, like when it came to the birth certificate, does he want to be named on it? Because I had this real thing of like, I don't want my child to have just one name on the birth certificate. But actually, what I would say to most women is that if there is any dodginess in a relationship whatsoever, try to not put their name on the birth certificate if you can. They can always apply in court to have their name added to the birth certificate later on, but it can be quite a beneficial thing to not have them on the birth certificate if they don't need to be, or if you're worried, you know, that there's any potential risks.
For what reason? Is that like for custody or?
Yeah, I mean, so if you're named on the birth certificate, then you have parental responsibility for that child. If you're not named on the birth certificate, you do not have parental responsibility, regardless of whether you're the biological father of that child. So I make all decisions about my son. My son's dad, even though he is his biological father, he cannot, he wouldn't even be able to take my son away on his own without my consent. He wouldn't be able to make medical decisions for my son without my consent. He wouldn't be able to apply for certain things. He has no parental responsibility. I give him, he's involved now, which is, you know, comes sort of later in the story. So I give him permission to make decisions and to do things for my son, but I am the only one with PR.
And you mentioned that you had, sorry, like for my ignorance, but I don't know what it is, but pre-eclipsia?
Pre-eclampsia, yeah. I'm not actually sure what causes it, but it's quite common, but it's very dangerous. So I think if you go into full eclampsia, I think mum can die. I think it's not a risk to the baby. I think it's a risk to the mum. I think it's too much protein.
And is that something that's in pregnancy or in birth?
In pregnancy. So I had gestational diabetes. So I was being monitored more regularly throughout my pregnancy. And then on my you have like a, just an appointment or whatever, I think I was like a week away from my due date. And when I went in, they checked my urine and whatever. And they were like, right, you've got way too much protein. This is a sign of preeclampsia. You're not going home. We need to induce you today. And then they induced me, but that didn't work. It took a little while. It took like 24 hours.
But you're in hospital.
I was in hospital, for the whole time. Because as soon as there's any sign of preeclampsia, which the initial signs for me was that my feet were really, really swelled, my feet and my ankles, and then my fingers started to get really swollen. Yeah, and then they realized it was preeclampsia. So they had to get me in for an induction a week before my due date. And then because of like a whole range of complications, I ended up having to have an emergency C-section.
And was your mum there for this, by the way?
Yeah, my mum and my sister were present. And it was horrible because the midwives kept asking, like, where's dad? Because you don't have a consistent midwife. Like, they kept changing shifts throughout the labor. And each new one that came on was like, so where's daddy? And it was just like, oh, for fuck's sake, if one more person asked me that, you know, it really just made me feel like, well, he's not fucking here, all right? You know, like, and I found that happened quite a lot. Like, so my son's dad got involved with my son when he was about 2.5. And prior to that, like, even if we were in shops and stuff, you know, my son's in the buggy and he's not even at speaking level yet, but people would be like, oh, look what you've got. Are you going to take that home and share that with daddy? And I used to feel so gutted, like, every time anybody said that.
Did you correct them or did you feel like embarrassment around?
No, I went along with it. I went along with it. I was just like, ha, 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 ha. Now I'd probably correct it. But then it used to trigger something in me, this like real sense of inadequacy and real sense of like, you know, my son, he doesn't understand what on earth they're saying at the moment, but he's going to come to the point at some point in his future where someone's going to say that and he's going to be like, what? Who's daddy? You know what I mean? And it would just fill me with all these just awful sinking feelings. So I never wanted to make the situation more awkward by going, actually, his dad fucked off with another woman when I was pregnant. You know what I mean? There was just, but now I would. I'm in a different place now. But I was embarrassed.
Did you find that there were like judgy attitudes towards you being a single parent if and when people knew?
No, not that I've ever noticed. And you know, it wasn't even because I've never had, you know, I was raised by a single mum. My parents split up when I was quite young. I was about 7 when my parents split up. So I've never, you know, vast majority of people in my class, their parents were separated. So I've never had negative views about single parents. It was an internalized thing for me. It wasn't a way that I would have ever judged anyone else. But for me, it was like, fuck, like, not only are you a single parent, but the dad's not even there. It's not like my single parenting when my dad was still seeing us on weekends and stuff. It's like complete absence. And for a long time, I internalized that as being to do with me, you know, and it clearly wasn't, but it really felt, yeah, I felt ashamed of it, not of being a single parent. I felt ashamed that I was such an awful person that a man would actually relinquish the choice to experience his own first child. You know what I mean? And I've worked on that, and my head is not in that space at all. But initially, that's how I felt.
God, it's mad, isn't it? It's like there's something about like women, this is a massive generalization, but there is something about women that we just internalize like complete assholes.
We give them so much power.
We make it about us. Even my friend, like she's dating at the moment as a single mum, which is something that I want to get onto you. And a guy she was like chatting back and forth with on this dating app, and they were talking about having a coffee. And when she mentioned that she'd adopted and, you know, there was no dad, he basically blocked her. But he didn't tell her he wasn't going to block her. She said she just like noticed straight away that his whole like demeanor change. But I think the issue was that he was going, what, so you have her all the time? I think he was kind of hoping that she'd be free on weekends, that there would be no like child around or something. And anyway, he blocked her. So she was like, I'm not ready to date. Like, obviously this is how people are gonna view it, and I'm sick of being the one that's too nice, and obviously like people don't want to date me because I've got my daughter. And I was like, it's because of him. It's because of him. Like, and also, what a fucking swerve that he could not even communicate. Because I said to her, it's a fair enough reason, you know, that somebody might not want to like date someone with a child. Like, it, you know, not everybody would and not everyone does, and that's okay. But it's the fact that he could not communicate that and made her feel like it was a her problem.
Absolutely. And there's so many single mums note that if you're talking to people on apps, the second that you mention it, they're out. I was talking to my friend yesterday, actually, who's got three kids. And she said that, you know, it's a huge, there's so many conversations that she have that the second that she meant, you know, they'll know she's a mum. And then she says, I've got three kids. And that's it. Gone, blocked. But again, like you say, that's on them. And they would have never been a good match. So it's not a loss. And there are people out there who will wholeheartedly accept the fact that you've adopted a child or that you've got three kids or six kids or whatever, you know,
from your own, well, from both your personal experience, but also like being a dating educator, for anyone who is listening now, who's a single parent and like thinking of putting their, I was going to say their feet, that's not the phrase, dipping their toes back into the dating world. Like what would your advice be for dating with a child?
Oh, there's so much advice. There's a new dating app starting, actually, which I haven't tried yet, but I know the owner, Zoe, and she's amazing. There's an online community for single parents called Frollo. I don't know if you've heard of the Frollo community, but it's been a really, really positive platform. So far, the way that they've used it is for women to connect with other single mums, and loads of people have made really great friendships on there with parents who live like locally in their area. And now Frollo are developing, I think it's launching on Valentine's Day, a dating app for single parents. So everybody on there has to be a single parent, men and women. And they've got their security is as high level as the banks in terms of having to put a driving license, passport or whatever to say who you are. So I think that's going to open up a new world really for people who are dating as single parents, because you already know that everybody on there is cool with the fact that you're a single parent and is actually probably wanting to look for some, you know, blended family situation in the future. But even something like that doesn't necessarily negate the risks. And when you're dating as a single parent, I think you have to be, you know, when you're dating as a single person, you have to be cautious, you have to avoid red flags, but really the only person that you need to worry about is yourself. You know, if you get into some shit, if you make a wrong decision, if you see a red flag and you ignore it, it's only you who's going to suffer. when you have children, it's a whole different ball game. You can't date in the same way that you did when you were a reckless, childless singleton, you know, because you are now responsible for making sure that those red flags and those risks do not come anywhere near your children.
Wow. Do you know what? This is mad to me, but I'd never even considered the risk factor. I'd always considered the, like, the judgment, or, like, you know, do you say that you're a single parent on your dating app, because then at least people know what they're getting before they speak to you. All of that I'd considered, but you're
so,
right.
So I'm open to dating and I'm open to love, but I am so cautious about things, not only to protect my child directly from risk of harm, but I also know that I need to protect myself in a different way, because I can't be a good parent if I'm suffering from the emotional fallout of another fuckboy. And I've been there, you know, like when my son was younger, I was dating someone. I was in love with him. He was my boyfriend. We'd only been together 6 months. But, you know, I really thought it was going somewhere. And then I got a call one day from his baby mum, who he lived with and had a child with. And I was absolutely shocked. But I remember that call, it was a text actually. Was it a call or a text? I can't really remember. But I was at, like, Tots football or whatever. And I remember it coming through. And, you know, when your heart is beating and you've got that, like, anxiety and you're just discovering something and you're like, when you're in that mode, you can't look after your child properly. And I was just obsessed with, like, getting all these texts back from her and piecing these things together of, like, but I was with him on that night. Were you with him on that night? What about Valentine's Day? And I remember my son coming to me for attention and me feeling like, oh, just take your Ribena and go and just stop, like, watch a TV program, because I can't, like, I've got to be on my phone dealing with this right now. And I remember then going to bed and feeling so awful, because that day I'd been so consumed with this man drama that actually my son had just been like an irritant. You know what I mean? He needed my attention, but I just didn't have the capacity. I was just like, oh, get put on another, you know, CBeebies or whatever. And I really went to bed just feeling so awful and guilty that night. And I really knew that I could never... I mean, we can't avoid heartbreak. We can't avoid that kind of stuff. But it really showed me how careful I have to be, because any man who emotionally harms me, any upset that I go through, directly impacts on my son.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding, a brand new podcast bringing together people's real ghost, extraterrestrial, and paranormal stories, as well as getting some inside details from those who study the supernatural. I'll be listening through your paranormal stories every week and try to understand them, as well as chatting about my own encounters with an occasional paranormal investigator too. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts from, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Acast. Just search for Paranormal Activity with Yvette Fielding.
you know, I do say to single parents who are using the generic apps, like, don't say that you're a single parent on your front profile. Like, drop it into conversation fairly soon into the conversation, but don't have it on your profile, because there are dodgy people out here who will specifically target single mums.
What, so you wouldn't say that you've got a child on your dating profile?
No, not on my front, not on the profile page, no. Really? Because then I've become a target, yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And this is what I mean, again, by like making sure you're going to the right people for advice, because my friend who I was talking about, when she told me about her experience and the guy basically blocking her when he found out that she was not only a single mum, but to an adopted child, and he cut out, I was like, have you got it on your page? You should have it on your page, because then you avoid those type of people. But again, like, I hadn't considered the risk factor. I know this is like such a deep thing to talk about as well on the podcast, but I think it's just so important, isn't it? Because you're right, like, there are paedophiles. Like, it's like, even, you know, there's a case and that's just kind of come to light in the media at the moment about the girl in America, the black girl who was murdered on a date. And I was thinking, wow, I used to really go on dates with people and take it to heart if I didn't hear from them again. But actually, like, they could have, I mean, not that they were murderers and stuff, but do you know what I mean? Like, we really forget that there's a lot of bad people out there.
Yeah, I mean, if you even just think about, you know, there's so many. Grace Mullane is a real prime example of somebody who just went on a date with a guy and never came back. And yeah, you're right, that case in America, I think it's her name, Lauren.
Lauren something, a double
panel. Lauren Smithfield, I think.
Yeah.
Awful. And it hasn't even been investigated properly, which is all very much rooted in racism and the fact that she's a black woman and that her date was a white guy. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem. As a woman, I wouldn't be, you know, I would give very different advice to men. You know, men can quite easily put children on their dating apps, not their photo. I wouldn't say men shouldn't put their photos on dating apps. But, you know, the risk of encountering a female paedophile is extraordinarily slim. The risk of it the other way around is unfortunately much higher. But I do think it's really important to get it in. Don't leave it too long. So, you know, like, the first couple of questions, how was your weekend? Even if you didn't see your child, or like, mention the child in that. So, oh, my son was at his dad's this weekend, so I had a chilled one. Or I had my son this weekend, so we went to XYZ. Get it in straight away, but don't put it on the front page.
So what you're saying is that basically that there is obviously the potential that somebody would not be interested after chatting to you because you have a child, but that is not your problem to internalize, but it will stop potential predators targeting you.
Yeah, exactly that.
God, that is some solid advice that I would never in my naive world have thought of.
I come from a career where I have dealt with, I couldn't even begin to tell you how many cases I've dealt with where a mother has met somebody online, moved him in within 6 weeks or something, and then, God, you probably don't even want to hear the stuff that has then happened as a result of that, you know? I've seen it time and time and time again. People meeting on dating apps, often Facebook. Facebook seems to be the one where they seem to meet people who turn out to be dodgy. I'm not sure why that is, but I've seen it so many times. So I'm extra cynical, and you know, most people are going to be fine putting that they have children on a dating app. You know, 70% of the time it's going to work out absolutely fine. I'm just very risk averse when it comes to anything to do with children.
How do you navigate all of it? Like, let's forget dating. Like, we say this a lot, like, I couldn't do it. How do you do it? Like, single parents are amazing. How do you do it? But genuinely, how?
You just get into a rhythm and a routine. And, you know, in some ways I find being a single parent not easier, but everything is on me. I don't have to compromise about the way that I raise my son, or about the things that I teach him, or the things I allow him to do or don't allow him to do. You know, there's some benefit in it just being me, and I'm in complete control, and I'm a bit of a control freak in some ways. So I guess that kind of suits me, but it is difficult. It's difficult. There's things that I really struggle with, like going on holiday with him. We haven't been on holiday for a couple of years together, but whenever we have been, it's always just been me and him. And when I book the holiday, I'm always like, yeah, we're going to get away. And it's going to be really fun. And then whenever I've arrived there, I've spent the week feeling so sad and so alone, because it's all families. Or you very rarely see like another woman, you know, another woman and just the kids, very rarely. And if there are single parents, often they go together with like friends and stuff. And I have spent many times just sat like in a holiday disco watching my son doing like dances or whatever, and just on my own at a table, and just felt this sickness and this real sadness. So there's things like that that I found really difficult, like holidays and stuff. I find the money thing very difficult. My son's dad does contribute, but it kind of doesn't really touch the sides in terms of like rent, heating, electric, food, all of that sort of stuff. You know, it's all on me, and that can be quite difficult. There's nobody to lean on. You know, if like an extra big bill comes in, it's like, fuck, I've got to go further into my overdraft or whatever. And I find things difficult, just silly little things like, you know, cooking is really shit because I always cook too much. And then my son, his tastes change on a daily, but like one minute he'll really love eggs and now he doesn't eat them anymore. And then the food that I've cooked just doesn't get eaten because it's too spicy or it's, you know what I mean? So things like that, like I used to love cooking. I don't get any pleasure out of it anymore because it barely gets even eaten or enjoyed or appreciated.
You know what? I noticed that just even being like single, because I remember like when I was younger, funny enough, I was always in a relationship when I was younger, not necessarily a good relationship, but that is usually the case when you go from relationship to relationship, because it's be with someone instead of the right person. But I've learned and I've grown. But when I was single, and even when I was loving being single, I never, and to be fair, even now, but I guess I have a newborn and stuff, but I just never got my passion for cooking back, because it's not fun when you're...
Exactly that. You just lose the kind of passion for it. You know, I really have got into the habit of just like 5 staple meals that I know that will go down well, like carbonara, jacket potato, you know, like this really got into this mode of absolute shit cooking. But so it would be really nice to have somebody around who could just cook for me every now and then, or take responsibility for those things every now and then. So I think it's those things that are difficult. But you know, I've never not been a single parent. So I think I'm in a different position to a lot of single parents who have to adjust to that thing of, you know, having their partner around for the first 5 years or 10 years of their child's life and then being a single parent. I think it's a whole different ball game to me, where I've just been a single parent the entire time.
Do you find it annoying when you see people like, for example, me complaining about the fact that, like, the annoyance around the term hands-on dad? Is there must be a part of you where you're like, well, at least you've got the partner
to
help.
No, I don't feel like that at all. I find those things really irritating as well, that the bar is set so incredibly low for dads that we will like praise them for changing a nappy, like genuinely be like, wow, you've got such a good man because he's cooked for you. Like, wow. You know, I just find it incredibly frustrating that the lion's share of parenting is all on women, regardless of whether we've got partners or not. And then when we do, you know, if people do have good partners, it's like that partner is a fucking god because he's just doing very basic childcare. So I'm all for people complaining about that. I think that things need to be much more balanced.
It's funny because actually the one thing, if Tom and I ever argue, which let's be honest is a lot in the newborn state, I don't want to call it arguing because I think communication is healthy and it's better to actually vent frustration and to know where Absolutely. Each other are standing. But when he says things like, oh, I'll give him a bath to help you, and I'm like, it's not helping me, it's helping us. Yeah. Like you are as much the one to give him a bath as me. And he's always like, oh, don't start. And I'm like, but anyway, he doesn't do it now because he understands very much that it's not helping
it's
me
such
out.
Madness. Like people do it to me all the time, you know. I'll say I'm a single parent. Men do this on dating apps as well, and then that then they'll say, oh, is dad around? I'm like, yeah, he sees him every other weekend. Oh, that's so good that he's around, that he's involved. What? Like, what? Why? How is that good that my son's dad sees him twice a month? Like, that's not good. That's what's the very bare minimum of what he should be doing. You know, like, don't pray. Nobody's ever praised me for looking after my child. Nobody's ever said, wow, that's so good that you're there with him, like, every day. Like, yeah, but like, could you just expect me to be there with him every day? Like, you know?
The most annoying thing I found was, like, really, really early on. So Alpha must have been 2 weeks old. So I still had stitches. I had, like, an anal prolapse. Like, there was a lot going on. And basically, when I got a really bad boob rash, we had to go, like, really long story short, but we ended up having to go see a dermatologist because I couldn't get an appointment with the doctor because of lockdown. And my boobs were literally agony. And I would have spent any money in the world to have got rid of this rash. And Tom basically picked Alf. I think he got him out of the pram and picked him up. And a woman genuinely was like, oh, it's so nice to see a hands-on dad. And I remember thinking, like, he is not the one with stitches and his bum hole hanging out the wrong way around. Like, why are you praising him? And also, if you want to be, like, really basic about it and, you know, like, talking about the sexes, like, he is the stronger one. So why is he being praised for picking up the child? Like, yeah. No one would ever come up to me if I'm picking him up, even though technically that would have been bad for my childbirth recovery. No one would ever be like, so nice to see a hands-on mum.
Never, never. It's so fucked, isn't it? And people like to come with these debates about, like, well, it's just natural, isn't it? You know, men are hunters and gatherers and women are nurturers. It's like, no, fuck off. Like, there's actually no biological evidence to suggest that in any way, that men are not built to nurture and love their own children and care for them. And there is, you know, people like to talk about the animal kingdom. If you want to talk about the fucking animal kingdom, it's women, the lions in the lion kingdom. It's the mums who are all out looking for food while the kids stay at home with the dads, you know.
Do you know what, it's interesting because I'm obviously very passionate in talking about toxic masculinity and misogyny, and I know you use your platform even better than me for that as well. But what is your thoughts on, like, raising strong men? Because, and I have actually spoken about this on the podcast before, but, you know, whenever there is another, like, gender-based violence or sex-based violence, whatever you would call it, I was trying not to say violence against women because I know then that's putting it as the woman and erasing the man from it. But there's that meme that goes around which says, protect your daughters, and that's crossed out, and then it says, educate your sons. And I used to throw that around quite flippantly, and then now that I'm a mum to a son, I'm like, okay, yeah, of course I want to educate my son, but how? And how do you navigate the sort of, like, toxic masculinity? Because it affects boys as well. Like, you know, I don't know the type of person Alf is, but I want him to be whatever sexuality is. I don't want him to be embarrassed for being sensitive. How do you navigate it, especially now that you've got a son that's going into senior school?
Well, you know, the first thing, you're already, like, 10 steps ahead of a lot of people because you're thinking about that. So any parent who's actually thinking and considering that they want to instill this into their child, that their child's already, you know, got standing in pretty good stead. You know, there's a lot of people who wouldn't even think it, and there's a lot of people who are just misogynistic, and, you know, so Alf's already in a good position. He's being raised by a thoughtful parent who is thinking about how they're going to do this. So that's already one step, like, out the way. It really is about, I think for me, it's a daily thing. So again, a lot of the men that we see now who are heavily misogynistic, not only is it because of societal attitudes, but it's also what they've experienced within their own homes. You know, if you have witnessed your mum being downtrodden by your dad your entire life, and that is just normal, then you're not going to treat any woman any differently. So again, Alf is ahead of the game in that, because he's already going to be raised in a household where where his parents are equal, where he sees his dad being respectful towards his mum, and where he's not going to be exposed to dad making derogatory comments, coming home with page three and going, look at that, son, you know? So he's very privileged to be raised in that kind of household. And we really do have to take note, you know, like, if we are thinking about having children with somebody, if this is a man who displays misogyny or who thinks women are less than or who thinks that women have a particular role within the household, that is the message that's going to be imparted onto your children. And that is what they're going to witness. And that is how they're going to grow up, you know?
I speak to people all the time in my DMs that say, I'm really surprised by my partner's like behavior and attitude. So I suppose that is like a consideration, isn't it? Like that, what do you want your child to be around?
Exactly that. It's incredibly important to think about that. And I think it's also about really challenging everything they see. So for example, little things like I was watching Grease with my son, and it's such a pleasure, you know, when they get to the age where you can start to really enjoy like films that you know, you're still in the stage where you're having to watch really shit films.
I'm in the stage where I can't even watch films yet. I can't wait to get to like Disney film.
Oh, mate, you're so lucky. And then when we progress to the next day, like now we watch Ghost at the weekend and I was just like, yeah, I can introduce you to all these movies and you're starting to get them. Like, I love this. But like, so we're watching Grease and, you know, there's that scene where he's at the drive-thru. Danny tries to kiss Sandy. She pushes him away and she's like, Danny, he's like, Sandy. She pushes him away. He puts his arm around her again. And then she like gets out and storms off and throws the ring at him or whatever. And so like little things like that, I paused the film and I was like, let's talk about what just happened there, because he put his arm around her and she didn't like it, but he went for it again. Like, let's have a discussion about that, you know. And then there's my son going, oh no, that's absolutely wrong. Yeah, you know, I'm instilling those things in him from an early age so that is just normal to him.
That's so good, because I feel like I grew up in a world where it was like, oh, if someone doesn't like you, keep trying. That was definitely the message to boys. But also if you were in bed with a guy, or let's say it's like more teenagers and you're hooking up with a guy and he's trying it and trying it and trying it.
Yeah.
It was always like the girls that were considered like foolish or gullible for giving in, as opposed to the guy for being like predatory for continuing to try until the girl gives in.
Yeah, and that's a message that, you know, if I had a daughter, I'd also be pausing the film at the same time to say the fact that he just tried after she said no the first time, that's disrespect, he's breaching consent, these are your boundaries, you know. And these are things that I wish people had stopped and told me at the time when I was watching these movies and just going, oh yeah, this is how you get the guy, you change yourself completely into a slag, or, you know, into hot stuff and then he'll want you. You know, all of these movies provided so many messages to me that were never counteracted with anything, with any type of positive sex education. I'm really open with my son about anything to do with sex. And I have been right from very early, you know. My belief is if they ask you the question, they're ready to know the real answer. And that can be incredibly awkward, but it's the right thing to do, because you also then create a space where your child feels really safe to ask you things. And so that's been really nice for me now that he's getting a bit older and he will stop and say, Mum, you know, I won't necessarily say the things because I don't want to humiliate him, but, you know, he'll say certain things to me and I'm like, I am so happy that I created a space where you feel safe to do that. So like you, I want my son to be whoever he wants to be. So I was painting my nails a couple of years ago. My son must have been about 8. I was painting my nails and he was like, oh, can you paint mine? So I did his toenails and his nails. Nothing in that at all. He just wanted his nails painted. Doesn't mean he's gay, and who cares if he is. And that was that. And then I didn't remove it before he went to his dad's for the weekend. And then when his dad dropped him back, he was like, I need to have a word with you. This is really serious. And then had a go at me about allowing my son to have his nails painted, and was just like, don't ever do that again. Don't ever let my son go out of the house like that again. And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, boys don't do that. And I was like, why? And he's like, well, it's not for boys. Explain to me why. And he just didn't have a rationale behind it whatsoever. It's all wrapped up in such toxic masculinity. But then I was able to have that conversation with my son and be real and talk about toxic masculinity and talk about why his dad's being such a dick about it, you know? Whereas actually, if we were together, it'd be much more of a battle within the household about that kind of thing. But everything is a teachable moment, you know?
I've always really hoped, and I hope that I will have this really like open dialogue, but because I grew up in a household where nobody talked about feelings, and actually I was desperate to talk about feelings, but like it just wasn't the norm, I would never even think to stop and pause the TV. Or maybe I would, I don't know, but I'm sure that there's going to be like so many parents hopefully nodding along being like, I'm going to start pausing Greece and all the other things that we see, because it's like the perfect way to talk about an open dialogue. Like you said, we've not even mentioned your incredible book that has just come out. Please just tell us more about it.
It is a dating guide. There's loads of dating books out there, like The Rules, Why Men Love Bitches. There's so many dating books.
I read them all.
Yeah, me too. And all of them, all they taught me was you desperately need to get a man, and this is how you do it, by basically pretending to be like this cool casual person who doesn't give a shit about anything. And that's just really not me, and none of the other dating books worked for me whatsoever, because I'd read them and I would still be equally vulnerable out there on the dating scene, fucking everything up like a clown.
Well, I remember even thinking like, God, how can I be more of a bitch?
Yes,
like,
yes.
I don't want to be nice. Like, I wish someone had just said to me, you can still be nice, but you just need boundaries, as opposed to me thinking I had to pretend to be a bitch.
Exactly that. So yeah, I've written the book that I think I really needed before I went fanny first into dating, particularly after having a son, because that prior to that, dating apps weren't around, but after that they were, and it was like coming out of a long-term relationship into this new world of dating apps as a single mum. I was just floundering. I didn't know what I was doing. I made every mistake you could possibly make, and I found that nobody was talking about these realities in any dating books anywhere. Nobody was talking about you know, what it means when someone ghosts you, or what to do when somebody is way too rough in bed, or how to deal with stuff like them approaching you in a sexual way in the first message on a dating app, you know, like, so I've tried to cover everything. It is about dating from a heterosexual woman's perspective. It's about acknowledging how misogyny actually impacts on that, and how our gender impacts on our dating life. It's about understanding how to get really comfortable with being single, so that you are dating from a healthy place, not a desperate place. It's about looking at what red flags you might be bringing to dating, and your own attachment styles and mental health, and how that can impact. It looks at different types of fuckboys that you might encounter, and how to tell the red flags for each different type. It's very in-depth, thorough, and I really hope that it helps particularly women to avoid shitty men.
God, I feel like this is even for like people who are listening who are parents, like, what gift for your like teenage daughter, or would, is it
absolutely I think read it if you've got teenage kids, so that you know what kind of stuff they're going to be exposed to in the future. Read it even if you're happily married, because you've probably got friends or sisters or nieces who may really benefit from some of the advice that you pick up in there. You know, I think it's just generally going to be, hopefully, a really helpful guide to people about navigating all the shit that we have to face.
I'm honestly so excited to read it. And before I let you go, and I am so conscious of how precious time is as a parent, and how much that we've chatted, but I do have a message through every week. I basically read out a message from one of my lovely listeners. And this is from Kim, who actually want some dating advice. So I thought I would like put this one to you, because who better? So she says, hi Ashley, I was wondering if you had some advice. I'm not exactly about parenting, but it's been eating away at me. I'm currently dating my daughter's father. Our relationship's not perfect, but we work on it every day, and I love him. He has a few friends and they are close. After a recent vacation with them, I've started having feelings for one. It was so out of the blue, but the more he's around, the more I feel and the worse I feel. I love my boyfriend. I want to spend my life with him, but I can't ignore these feelings, and I need to work through them and get past it. I'm ashamed and sad, and I don't know what to do. How can I get past them?
Oh, God. I mean, the first way to get past them is to forgive yourself for feeling them, because having that sense of shame and sadness is just going to compound everything even more. And, you know, it's that almost that thing of like when you're not supposed to be doing something or thinking about something, it makes it 10 times harder. It's like in your face all the time. So actually, rather than trying to be like, I can't feel this, like shutting your eyes to it, actually feel it. Allow yourself to feel it with no shame and no guilt, and realizing that our brains do mad things sometimes that we're not necessarily even responsible for. Like the more that you feel that this is some dirty secret thought, the harder it will be to get rid of it. So first of all, accept it. And then start to think about, is it really this person that you're feeling for? Or is it something about the way that they're making you feel? You know, because the way that they're making you feel could be done by anyone. And it might actually be a bit of a sign and a bit of a key for you as to something that might be missing from your own relationship, or something that you could encapsulate or gain in your own relationship, you know? So what is it about this person? What is it making you feel? Is it sexual excitement? If it's that, then you could maybe explore with fantasizing, and that's quite healthy. It's not unhealthy to fantasize about somebody else when you have a partner. It's very normal. Is it something like they make you feel alive? They make you feel, you know, they laugh at all your jokes. They make you feel funny. They make you feel bright. Is that something that's missing from your relationship with your partner? If it is, then again, it may not be this person that's actually attracting you and making you feel these things. It's that missing thing. It's that laughter. It's that feeling really valued for how funny you are or whatever. And then that would be a sign that maybe you need to try to get whatever that is in your relationship. And the only way to do that would be communicating with your partner, couples therapy, introducing new things or whatever. But yeah, so I would really forgive yourself for feeling this. But I wouldn't ever feel like recommending that telling this person or telling your partner, ending the relationship because of these feelings would necessarily be the right or healthy thing to do. Work on it first. Think about where it's coming from.
And don't do a Love Actually, because I find that the most toxic scene that people think is romantic. You know, the scene where the guy goes to the door with all the cards. That it's
with
like
the cards. I've never actually seen that film, but I know what he's doing. It's the best friend's friend. It's his best friend's wife or something, isn't it? And yeah, it's a horrible thing to do. You could never go there with this person. They've had a child together. She, you know, so even if she did fall in love with the friend, or it was genuinely love, you could never go there. There's places you cannot go, and your baby father's best friend is just one of them. It's no go, never.
I like what you said as well about like recognizing like maybe what's lacking in your relationship, because I didn't know until like very recently, well, like 2018 when I was single, but about the love languages. And actually, like, it makes so much sense to, if, for example, like your love language is physical touch, and maybe like, you know, your boyfriend or partner's friend is very like handsy and that makes you feel really loved, then that's something that's really easily solvable by saying to your boyfriend, like, oh, you know, I love it when like you can we hold hands or whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that. Lala, thank you so much for your time. And I've been so desperate to get you on the podcast, and it's just been so interesting. And
thank you.
I'm so grateful. And thanks to everyone else for listening. If you're still listening after this mammoth episode, to Mum's the Word, the parenting podcast. And I always feel like a YouTuber when I say this, but obviously don't forget to hit the subscribe and follow button so that you never miss an episode if you're enjoying it. And leave us a review. You can put a review on the Apple Podcasts, hopefully with a 5-star rating, but I won't force you. And then it might be one of the messages that I read out. Or of course, you can get in touch on the voice note or the email, which I will write below. But I'll see you same time, same place next week. Thank you so much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.